Hello, reviewers, and welcome to a very special episode of Deja Review Review. I am your host, Andrew Horton, and I am here today with a very special guest, Bob France.
Yes, hello.
How you doing, Bob?
Man, I am wonderful on this bright and sunny and lovely Cincinnati morning. It's great.
Is it warm there?
Dude, it's going to be like 81 degrees today. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Here in Fort Wayne, it's going to be about 74.
You know, we should enjoy it while we can because, as we know, the Midwest winters come fast and hard, and it'll probably be, by the end of the month, it'll be like -8, and there'll be 6 inches of snow on the ground.
Yeah, that's what I'm assuming.
Yeah, so I'm going to enjoy my 80 while I have it, so that's nice.
All right. So you might recognize Bob from Monty the Dinosaur, released by Action Labs Entertainment.
Yeah!
Woo! How did you come up with the idea of Monty the Dinosaur?
I've been writing comics independently now since probably 2009. It's a lot of self-published stuff. Everything I did, as a matter of fact, was self-published. But then I had a child, and that kind of changed my attitude about comics. My daughter at a very young age was really interested in comics, and being, you know, 2-3 years old, there wasn't a lot of stuff for her. So right. I decided to make my own book, and the book simply came about as her younger brother were at the museum center here in Cincinnati, Ohio, and we were walking around the museum center, and they had a dinosaur exhibit. We were looking at the dinosaurs and talking about dinosaurs and just having a wonderful time. And as we were leaving the dinosaur exhibit, she said, "Daddy, will you tell me a story about a dinosaur?" And I said, "Sure." And then I just made up on the spot this dude named Monty the Dinosaur, and He had no friends, and he was looking for a friend, and he met a young girl named Sophie, and they had fun together. And I was like, wow, this is pretty neat. And she liked it. And she, you know, I know that she liked it because every time we got in the car together, she would ask me to tell her stories about Monty. And it was fun some days. Some days I really didn't come up with much. And right. she knew it, and I knew it, and I was swinging for the fences and missing badly. But then the better stories, you know, I told her over and over and over again, and I almost got it down to like a pattern. And I said, you know what, I'm going to write these down, and I'm gonna make a book for her. So I hired an artist, Gene Franco, out of Argentina, who's super awesome. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do a book for her birthday. Like that was going to be her fourth birthday present, was Monty the Dinosaur, her own comic book. And I made it, and my wife said, wow, this is really great. You should try to do something with this. So I did, and I did, which is cool.
Right. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. So it was a very organic process for us. It was just something like a love of storytelling and a love for my daughter and a love for just comics in general, you know, and to see the enthusiasm in her face when I would tell her stories about Monty and stuff like that. So it happened very organically, which was fun.
Yeah. And the comic book kind of reads that way because it's two short stories an issue, and it kind of reads like you're telling a story to your kid.
Yeah, it's just one of those things, man. Like I said, the good stories, I made sure that I kind of memorized them almost, even some of the dialogue, and then I got it down to a certain point and just sat down at the computer and pounded them out. And the bad ones are forgotten forever. Like, I just, you know, there's some really bad ones out there, too, that are floating around. One of them was about because a lot of the times my daughter would give me the parameters for the story. She'd say, okay, this time I want Monty to go to visit his meemaw, and they would go to a pancake restaurant. And I said, all right. And that would be the story. I'd be like, all right, well, Monty and Sophie are driving in a car, and they're going to visit their meemaw, and they go to the pancake restaurant, and blah. And they were really bad, but I'm not going to bore your podcast audience with them, but, you know, she liked it, so it was cool.
You talked a lot about your daughter. Is Sophie based on your daughter?
Yes, it is based on my daughter, which was a problem at first because when she first saw the book, she was a little bit afraid of Monty because he's a dinosaur and he had kind of teeth, I guess. Not anything like really like gashing and scary looking, but he had like, I guess, kind of a teeth thing going on. And she was not happy with the way that she looked. She didn't think she looked like the character. But then after some of her friends saw the book at her birthday party and liked it, then she came around. So it took peer pressure for my daughter to actually like her own comic, which was pretty fun.
Yeah. Does that mean that you're that Monty is based off of you?
No. Monty is more Sophie, and I am more Sophie in the book. If you read the book, Monty is kind of impulsive and silly and and quick to come up with like these harebrained schemes. And I have a lot of that in me, don't get me wrong. But like, Sophie a lot of times has to play like the voice of reason and kind of the straight man, if you will. And a lot of times with being a parent, you have to be the straight man. Like that's your job. Like you are you are always with Jerry Lewis and you have to be Dean Martin or things will just go completely off the rails. So it's your job to play the straight man, you know, to kind of, you know, herd the cats, if you will. And that's Sophie's job in the book, is to kind of herd the cat that is Monty the dinosaur, if that makes sense.
When did you first decide you wanted to start writing comics?
That's an interesting kind of story within itself. I got back into comics around, it's weird because they kind of coincide with two events. I quit drinking and I had all this extra money and I had no idea what to do with it. And a friend told me who was reading comics at the time, who strangely is no longer reading. He was like, dude, you got to read this. I know you're a big fan of comics. The Marvel superheroes are fighting each other. And I was like, what are you talking about? And it was the first Civil War that Mark Millar wrote. And that's when I got back into comics. I read comics when I was a kid all throughout like my teenage years and stuff like that. And then around 15, 16, I stopped. Then I got back into it around 25. Probably around 26, somewhere around there. I'm not really sure. I can't remember exactly. But then I started reading books again, and I really got back into it. And then, you know, I was – again, I had all this free time because I wasn't drinking anymore.
Right.
So like, I just didn't really know what to do with myself. So I was kind of like a ship without a rudder, and I started have you ever heard of a site called SWFans.net? It's like a Star Wars role-playing site, like a text role-playing.
No, I haven't heard of that.
Okay, well, I started doing that, and that's exactly what it was. It was like a Star Wars role-playing site where like people would create these characters, because I was always into D&D and stuff like that, and I always had an interest in storytelling and writing and stuff. Being on the radio, I used to tell stories constantly. Not like Paul Harvey stories, but just stories, you know, about my life and whatnot. So we did So I just started writing on this site, and it was really fun, and I enjoyed it. And then a friend of mine, my first sober friend, a guy by the name of Mike Federale, who is a writer and a musician, who actually runs the Tidewater Comic Con in Virginia Beach, Virginia, said, hey, man, have you ever come up with an idea for your own superhero? Because I met him at a comic shop, and we used to talk comics all the time, and I was like, kinda, because I had this loose idea, and he was like, you want to write something? And I said, that sounds fun. And that's how it started. Like, it was that simple. Like, we were at a bar. He was playing a gig one night. He was taking a break between his sets or whatever, and we were talking comics. And it just kind of came up, and he had an idea for something, and I had an idea for something. And then we put the two somethings together, and we wrote, like, as many people do when they write their first book, their first idea was like this 12-issue maxi series of craziness that we wrote, you know, not thinking about, you know, actually getting this thing done, just writing it down on paper. And right. So we wrote this clunky, gigantic 12-issue miniseries thing, and that's what we did, and that's how I filled a lot of time, and that's how I kind of figured it out. You know, I had no idea how to write comics, so I would just kind of go on websites and read scripts and look at breakdowns and all that stuff, and I found the process enjoyable, so I just kept doing it. And here I am.
Here you are.
Here I am.
Do you have any other series besides Monty the Dinosaur that you've worked on?
I had a self-published thing called 41, again, which I made a critical error with that. It was a four-issue mini. I learned afterwards that doing four-issue minis for your first book probably isn't the best idea. Mm-hmm. There are things when I go back and read it. I mean, it's not bad. The artists I worked with on that were fantastic. I worked with a guy named Pablo Pepino, who you may know from Skies of Fire. He does that book, Skies of Fire. You should look into that thing. It's killer looking.
All right.
I worked with Pablo on issue one. And then I worked with another dude by the name of Andrew Singleton on issues 2, 3, and 4. And then I worked with a dude who is still a dear friend of mine by the name of Hoyt Silva. Hoyt's done a few things for Devil's Due. He's got a book coming out with Action Lab called Adventures in Crime with Shane Berryhill. I worked with him on issue 5. Those things really aren't really – they're not really around anymore because, like okay. I said, I just don't want to reprint them because I don't know right. because I don't know if they would sell. Some of it isn't very good. You know, as a writer, as any kind of artist, as a musician, you said you were a musician forever, Andrew. Like you go back and you listen to some of the things that you used to do, that the music that you used to play, and then you give it a couple years and you listen, and you go, wow, that was pretty bad. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like, I recently found my old MySpace page, so I understand what you're saying. Complete with the emo hair and everything.
Yeah, so there's stuff there that is salvageable and good, and I would mm-hmm. like to revisit the stuff. I think the issue that Hoyt and I did together was really good. I wrote that with the help of my friend Drew Moss. He helped me kind of navigate through the story. Drew is an artist for IDW and for Oni Press, and he's getting ready to do Copperhead with Image. Drew's a great guy and he's an amazing talent. Yeah. And just talking to Drew about the process, I think that book, if I was going to reprint any issues of 41, it would be the book that I did with Hoyt, because I actually had like kind of an editor on it, and like we kind of work things out together, and you know, he helped a lot in that process, but yeah, that thing is kind of, it's just, you're never going to see it. I have copies of it, and I don't even have like 1 and 2. I have like random 3s and 4s floating around. So it's just something that I don't right. want to invest any money in to redo. Then I have Monty. That's going to be in bookstores. It's going to be like in bookstores, like Barnes and Noble and stuff like that.
Right.
It's crazy, man. I'm big time, baby. But yeah, so I got that shaken. And then I've got a book that I worked with Kevin Cuff and Rachel Ordway and Micah Myers called The Elvis Adventures.
Okay.
We did a one shot for that. It's pretty fun. It's about Elvis Presley, who is the king of rock and roll, as we all know.
Right.
An invading alien force comes down from their planet, believing he is the king of the earth. So it gets lost in translation, and he's forced to fight off these aliens. It's very fun. It's very silly. It's 32 pages of just sheer mayhem and just silliness. If you can picture, it's on Comixology. So if you're listening to this and you're interested, you can buy it on Comixology. If you ever wondered what Elvis would sound like if he was voiced by George Clooney from Oh Brother Where Art Thou fighting aliens, then this would be the perfect avenue for you, because that's the voice of Elvis in my head. So it's a really fun book. It's just, it's very simple. Like, I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel here. I'm kind of a silly human being. Like, that's what I do best. I did a comedy radio show for 10 years. Like, I don't want to say we were like a wacky morning zoo show, because we weren't.
Okay.
We were kind of like, we talked a lot of comics. We talked a lot of Star Wars. We talked a lot about girlfriends and wives and children and things of that nature. Like, it was just like a well-rounded show. We weren't like wacky. We were kind of dirty sometimes. It was fun. We did it for a long time, but I'm a silly human being. So I want to make silly comic books, you know?
Right. You said that, you self-published,
yes.
A couple of your titles. How does one do that?
One does that if you have a desire to make comic books, like you have a desire to tell stories, you have a lot of extra money, and you're okay with being rejected by 95% of the comic con audience. You have to, you know, there's a lot of rejection involved. There's a lot of false hope. There's a lot of crappy things that go along with self-publishing, but at the same time too, it's really great. Like it's a lot mm-hmm. of fun. Like, you get into this comics community. That's where I met you, Andrew, through it.
Yep.
You know, you kind of get involved, and you just work and you have fun and you just enjoy it. Like, you have to have a thick skin, and you have to love telling stories, and you have to not be afraid. You know, that's the main thing. Like, you're not going to make any money self-publishing. But you're going to have a good time, hopefully, and you're going to meet a lot of people, and you're going to get to shows and talk to folks, and you know, I love it. I think it's wonderful.
You know? Awesome.
So, but all you have to do is just write a. You have to sit down. You have to write a comic script, whether it's 8 pages or you know a single issue, which is 32 pages or 24 pages, and then you have to hire an artist. And you have to pay that artist because, you know, free art, you get what you pay for, you know?
Right.
So you have to pay the artist. You have to put the project together. Then you have to send it off to a – you have to get a cover made and all this other stuff. And there's a lot involved. Like it's spinning plates. But it's not spinning right. plates in like a negative connotation. It's spinning plates in like a whoa kind of fun circusy vibe, you know. And then you put mm-hmm. it all together and then you find a printer and then ta-da, you've made a comic book. And it's really fun. I remember, you know, even when I was doing 41, which was the first series that I worked on, like looking – like when I would get pages in my email, you know, it was like Christmas morning every time I got new pages because you're just like, wow, look at this. Right. It's amazing. But part of it, you have to get over that, wow, look at this. It's amazing. And look at it critically from like a storytelling point of view and from, mm-hmm. you know, a presentation and things of that nature. So there's a lot involved. You really have to get over that. This is amazingly wonderful. You know, you have to get over that and actually look at it critically, which can be hard sometimes.
I bet. What is your writing process like?
You know, it kind of depends on the project. Sometimes I like to, because I work a lot with a co-writer, like I said, a guy by the name of Kevin Cuff, who's a cool dude. And a lot of the times for me, it's the same thing. I like to kind of navigate everything in my head first. Like there are even points where I'll be in the shower and I'll be talking out scenes and dialogue, and then I kind of get things where I want to get it, then I try to outline it, and then I just sit down and play connect the dots. You know, I'm not a firm believer, I'm not a believer in like a hardcore strict outline like A B C D E F G must happen to make right. one issue, but I like to kind of have, you know, page turns and just scenes laid out in my head. So then I can move, you know, from A to B and B to C and kind of make it seamless, you know. Part of the fun for that is then you can kind of surprise yourself with an idea that you didn't think about. And then, you know, the process, the whole story isn't ruined. You just throw in like something for yourself, if that makes sense. But I like to kind of, I like to kind of plot everything in my head and then sit down and then kind of go from there. I'm trying to get better with just sitting down and writing to make it more like a job, if that makes more sense. Like a lot of people who, you know, professionals sit down and they write every day because that's their job. Like whether they're inspired or not, they just do it. A lot of dudes who self-publish, a lot of dudes and ladies, they write if they're inspired. Like you have to get out of that mindset because right. you're not going to be inspired to do it every day. You know, you have to sit down and get the work done. You have to move through it. The hardest part, I would say, Andrew, is to be honest with you, is after you come up with that initial rush of like, this is a great idea. Wow, this is going to be amazing. Like, because it happens to me every issue. And I believe it happens to like just following people on Twitter. It happens a lot as well. You come up with the greatest idea in the whole wide world and you couldn't be more excited about it. And then by about page 12, you think, oh my God, this is the biggest piece of shit I've ever written for in my whole life. And then you get to about page 16 and you go, all right, this is okay. And then page 19, you're like, oh my God, this is the worst piece of shit in the whole wide world. Page 24, you go, all right, screw it, it's done. Let's just get it to an editor and we'll see where we are. And that happens every issue of everything I've ever written. It's like, this is the best thing ever for 12 pages. And then it's like, oh my God, this is awful. I think I got a handle on this thing. Okay, it's done. And that's the process. Right. And that's the process for me. When you're working with a co-writer, it's a little cool. I don't know if you're a wrestling fan at all, but I'm going to use a wrestling.
I love wrestling.
You can make a hot tag.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like you can get to a point in your script if you're working with a co-writer, and Kevin and I do this a lot, where it's like I'll be in the ring and I'll be working my ass off, but then I run out of steam, so I got to make that hot tag to Kevin, and then Kevin comes in with his fresh ideas and he beats up the world for a couple minutes, and then you know, and then you just kind of hand the script off back and forth to each other, which happens a lot, which is nice. You know, because then again, I can get to that page 12 and go, oh my God, this is terrible. Tag Kevin in and he can come in with his fresh perspective on an idea and just go, which right. is cool, you know?
You said that you self-publish your comics. How do you put together a pitch?
There's a lot of research that goes involved with pitching. I've only pitched because I've only done three series. I've only pitched two books. I know that sounds actually no. I've pitched three books because see, I don't really like I don't like to do pitches
right
in the traditional sense of seven pages of art, come up with a storyline, send it out to somebody. Because if it doesn't get picked up, then I'm stuck with seven pages of a story that I really can't do anything with.
Right.
I have the mentality of if I'm going to pitch something, I'm going to finish an entire issue of it. So then at least I have something to sell at shows, if that makes sense. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
And then I can drop something on another creator at a show, go, hey, here's my book that I made. Because I think it takes a lot more effort to make an entire book than it does to make seven pages of art.
Yeah.
But when I pitch, I like to, like I said, I like to get my whole book made. I'll take my seven best pages, whether it's an action sequence or whatever the case may be. And I like to do research on the publisher and what they're doing. I pitched Action Lab Monty the Dinosaur because I know the industry and I know Action Lab has a pretty good track record with all ages books. Like they have a lot of good all ages titles. They have that. They have Princeless. They were running Grunk for a while. They have the actual dog book. They have some good all ages books. So I said, okay, I think this would be a good place for it. So what I did was I just put together the pitch. I read a couple other pitches that are out there because the internet, it's not just porn. It's a vast research facility for making comics. And there are enough great creators out there that have shared their pitches. So I just kind of read a few pitches, kind of wrote the pitch in the voice of the book, which I think is important. You know, sometimes I think people kind of bog themselves down in formalities to make sure that the pitch explains the book in a kind of formal sense. I want to make sure that the pitch, that when you read the pitch, you kind of get the idea of what the book is about. If your book is light and funny, make a light and funny pitch. You know, if your book is, you know, kind of dirty and, you know, and grim and gritty, then, you know, go that way with it, you know, but try to cater to the publisher, you know, and then try to cater your pitch to the book. And I think I did a good job with that with Monty the Dinosaur. I mean, you know, a lot of it's too is about the elevator pitch, that first kind of like, it's like this and this and this. You know, that's the elevator pitch. You know, your 11 seconds of here we are, this is what we're about. So it's a good idea of crafting your elevator pitch. I read something online recently. It was like, if you're having a trouble with your pitch, your elevator pitch, then come up with an elevator pitch for your favorite character, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, to practice, to kind of get into that mindset, because you spend this entire time crafting this whole universe, this whole world, this whole story of, you know, anywhere from 3 to 6 issues of stuff, and it's hard to scale it down into two sentences.
Yeah.
Into a paragraph. But, you know, you have to get it done because that's what the publishers want. But I think a lot of it, too, is researching the publisher itself. You know, like if you have an idea for something and you think that, you know, make sure that the publisher you're pitching to publishes those kind of books, or you're just wasting everyone's time.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's kind of like a job interview. You'd research the company that you're applying to and make sure that you're a good fit for it.
Yeah, totally. And I think that helped a lot with Action Lab. You know, like I said, Monty is an all ages book. It skews a little younger. But it's a good all ages book, but they have a good track record with that stuff. So I went there with it, and, you know, lucky enough for me, lo and behold, you know, here we are.
Yeah. Well, and I think even though it's targeted for more of a younger audience, it's kind of like, I'm going to compare it to Pixar, in that even though it's targeted for a younger audience, the humor is there for adults, and adults can get something out of it too.
Yeah, well, you know, that it has to be that way. Being a parent of two young children, I'm still reading books to my daughter, even comic books that we've been reading for 3 years now, 3-4 years. We're reading the same books over and over and over again. And like, you know, the better ones are books that have jokes for the adults in there too, because if it's the same kind of monotonous kids book, you may just shoot yourself in the face right there in front of your child, scarring them for life. So yeah, so you want to kind of put, you know, the jokes in there for the adults. And I mean, you know, if you go back and watch the Looney Tunes cartoons and stuff like that, there are a lot of jokes that go over the kids' heads that you catch later on as an adult, you know. I mean, hell, even like Ren and Stimpy, like go back and watch the original Ren and Stimpy episodes, go back and watch The Simpsons. You know, there are a lot of jokes in there that, you know, as a 9-year-old, I didn't get, but as a, you know, a 22-year-old going back and watching The Simpsons, I got all those jokes and it was really great. So you just kind of drop those little nuggets in there and hopefully it works. You know, like in issue 3, there's a Daily Show reference. Mm-hmm. And I don't expect any, you know, 7-year-old kid to know what the Daily Show is, but I expect I expect the parent reading the book to the kid, or the parent who hopefully reads the book before they give it to the kid, to get it and go, oh, that's cool. You know, so it's just stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yes. So I think this is your first podcast interview, Andrew. I think you're doing really well.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I'm really happy with the way you're doing this. You're executing really well.
Well, I have to bring the best content for my reviewers. So
yeah, and your review is really good. You do a really great job.
Thank you. I
appreciate all the fine work that you do for comics in general. Because I mean, it seems like the internet is like this kind of thieves' den of cowards and grumpy faces, where all they do is just kind of bash books and they're just total wiener dogs to people. It's nice to find reviewers who actually love the medium and try to be positive about comics. I think we need more of that.
Right. And my story with comic books is kind of similar to yours, where I was into it when I was a kid and then I dropped out of it for, you know, 10 plus years or so. And I didn't get back into it until about 3 years ago. So about 24 or so, and I got back into it. And when I did, I noticed that there was just a lot of negativity all the time. And I'm a huge believer in positivity. And I think that that's what most comic books are supposed to be, is kind of escapism and positivity, something to bring you hope, you know?
Yeah, and no, totally.
And so that's why I started. And like, I usually don't do negative reviews personally. I mean, I have opinions, but you know, not everybody wants to hear all my crap opinions, so yeah. I'm going to tell you what I like.
That's awesome. I mean, yeah. I wish a lot of the review industry for comics had that attitude. It's like some people just get off on being grumpy, and it's like, dude, like there's just so much of that out there, man. Like, let's be positive about comics. Let's be positive about all the work that goes into it. Let's be positive about the people that are trying to bring, you know, new voices and new audiences into comics. Like, it's just, let's have fun. Let's enjoy it, you know?
I graduated with a degree in psychology, and there's an interesting phenomenon where in order to feel special or powerful, people put down other people. And I've just never thought that was a good thing to do.
Wow. Yeah, it's true though, man. Like that is a very good point. You know, it's, and especially in the comics world, like you just go in and unfortunately there are more comic book guys from The Simpsons than dudes that are just, and gals that are just happy to be, you know, reading books and enjoying the great stories. You know, I don't know, man. It's just nice. It's nice to read a review. It's nice to read reviews that love the medium and they just don't want to, you know, crap on everything. So I really dig what you guys are doing over there.
Thanks. And I also think there's just a big segment of comic book people who take themselves way too seriously. They just think that they're somehow super intellectuals if they only read quote unquote intellectual comics.
Yeah.
And there's a place for that. I mean, I really like intellectual comics and deep comics, but you know, I also like fun comics. So yeah. I think there's a place for both.
Yeah, I think so too, man. I think I like deep and intellectual things too, but I find myself, I just can't resist the joke. Mm-hmm. I can't resist telling the joke. I can't resist silly things. So being silly for me works a little bit better. I mean, being silly is not everybody's thing. And I noticed that like there's a lot more kind of humor coming back into comics, which I think is fun. You know, like Ryan Ferrier, I think he's a guy.
He's great.
Yeah, he's a guy who's doing it out because they're funny characters. Yes, that like you know, Deadpool's one of those guys that tells jokes the whole time, and so does Spider-Man. Right. But it's cool because there are books that are coming out that aren't those guys that are actually kind of funny to read. You know, and that's really cool to see. And I think Ferrier is one of those dudes that's kind of leading that charge, where it's like it's okay to be kind of. You know, silly. I mean, Christ, he did a book that's a musical. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He wrote a musical comic.
In a block.
Yeah, that's amazingly ballsy, you know, to do
yeah,
something like that, you know? So, like, I dig stuff like that. It's very fun.
Right. So, getting back to Monty the Dinosaur, then,
yeah!
you guys have a trade coming out later this month, right?
Yes, the trade will be out the 23rd. The cutoff date for your local comic shop was yesterday,
or was
Halloween. But it's cool because you can still order it. You can go to Barnes & Noble. You can go to Amazon.com. Go to any of these Amazon.com. You can go to any of these places and order the book. So order the book because I really like it. I think it's good. And if you guys order it, then there'll be more of it, which would be cool because I like making comic books, as you can tell. But yeah, there's some really great stuff out there, man. Monty is it's a really fun book. The one thing that I did read in the reviews were that like this would be really great to read as a collection. So now's your chance.
Yeah.
You know, like read it as a collection. Here it is.
Almost like an anthology or something.
Yeah.
So does the trade collect the first four issues then?
We only have three issues.
Three, that's what I thought.
Yes, it's the first three issues. The way Action Lab solicits and the way they run business is something I agree with very, very strongly. They only solicit books when the entire first arc is completed.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't get that old school image idea of like a book gets solicited and never comes out. Like if they solicit a book, it's happening because it's done. It's
right.
just a matter of getting it printed and getting it in shops, which is cool. The only thing is, you know, Monty is a self-funded project. I paid for it out of pocket. So I didn't really have a lot of money to spend to make more issues. I have more issues written. If, like I said, if the trade does well, we're going to get it out there. But as it was, we only did three to begin with because like I just kind of ran out of money.
I understand that.
Yes. And it happens. You know, you're going to run out of money. And I did. But it was cool, man. We got the book made. I'm very proud of it. I think it's really well done. I'm going to go so far as to say is if I don't win an Eisner, I'm going to punch somebody in the face because this book is amazing.
But deservedly,
I mean, if I'm not at least nominated for some kind of award, there will be hell to pay. Hell to pay.
Well, Princeless got nominated for an Eisner. So.
Yeah, it's a great book, man. Like Princeless is awesome.
So right now you're not sure there's going to be more.
Hopefully there will be. If we do them, cool. If not, then I'll just probably ask Action Lab for the license back and just do it myself.
Okay.
Because you know, we have a contract in place, and like you know, there's certain parameters where you know if certain things are done, then you know we'll figure it out. But yeah, I mean, I'm always business. I'm always going to make Monty because it's something that I love to do. It's something that resonates really strongly with people. Like the people that have seen the book. Really enjoy it, which is fun. Like I mean, I'm sure many people don't do who make comics, but I was scouring the internet reading reviews because it's my first published work. And all the reviews I read were good, so that made me pretty happy. I didn't read anybody killing me, which was nice. But I mean, how can you honestly, like, what's there to hate about a silly dinosaur? You know what I'm saying? Like, what is there to hate about that? Like, it's, you know, it's not like he's trying. I'm not changing the world here, man. I'm just trying to tell some jokes and have a good time. And I think I did a good job. You know, I think the mission was accomplished.
I think so, too.
You know, like, I set out to tell some stories and to be silly and to have a good time. And again, I think I did that, so I'm happy. And my daughter likes the book, like issue two, when her brother shows up, Bobby, who eats all the bananas. So my daughter thinks that's the funniest thing in the entire world. She's read the damn thing at least 40 times, and every time she sees him, she laughs. So I'm that's enough for me, you know. Like I'm happy with that.
Yeah, she and I had the same reaction. So
well, that's good. That's good that you and my 6-year-old daughter have a similar sense of humor.
You know? Yeah, my wife thinks I have the sense of humor of a 6-year-old anyway.
Yeah, so I mean, there you go. But she loves you for it, so you can't argue too much.
Yeah. What do you think would be – I'm going to ask you kind of an off-the-wall question.
Shoot, man. I got it. I got answers for everything.
All right. What do you think would be some advantages and disadvantages of being a T-Rex in the 21st century?
Well, you'd be the only one, which is probably the first problem you'd run into. And then, like, all this awesome technology would be hard for you to use. Like, you wouldn't have an iPhone. Like, how would you have an iPhone, you know? It would be hard because you don't have thumbs. You know, right. Like, it would be hard to do a lot of things without thumbs. I don't think it would be hard to find things that you would fit into properly. Like, you couldn't have a job because you wouldn't, unless you worked outside. You know,
right, you could have a lawnscaping business.
Yeah, you could be a lad, but even that, though, not so much because, like, you're not going to eat things. You're not going to eat grass. You're a carnivore. So there would just be difficult, I think, to be a dinosaur in our modern times. People wouldn't. You'd probably just end up in a zoo, and that doesn't sound any fun either.
No,
you know, unless we were invaded by, like, giant monsters, and then having dinosaurs around would be pretty cool because then you could train the dinosaurs to attack the giant monsters. And then you'd be a hero because you would get to attack and kill giant monsters, which would be cool for everybody. And then everybody would love you. But then when there's no more giant monsters because you killed them all, what do you do from there? Now you're just this trained killing machine who has no monsters to kill. So you're bound to just, you know, kind of use your powers, your train powers for unfortunate evil and start attacking humans and things of that nature. So I don't know.
Yeah.
There's a lot involved in this. I don't know.
That story until the very end was eerily similar to Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yeah. But, you know, it got bad, though. Because, I mean, I feel bad for Rudolph because I watch it every year and, like, everybody's such an asshole to him.
And that's then, what, like, I say every year and no one agrees with me.
Yeah, and if I was Rudolph, I'd be like, hey, piss off. You know what I mean? Like, you guys didn't want to be my friends when it was a nice sunny day outside, but now that it's all cloudy and you need my red nose, you know what? You can kiss my red ass. That's what I would tell them.
Well, and I always tell people that it's a awful moral story because it basically says that you have to be useful to society in order for anybody to like you, and that the only reason why people liked him was so that they could use him.
It's true. No, you're exactly right. Like, it's bullshit. You know, pardon my French. I know I'm a kids book writer and I shouldn't use words like that, but it's just not fair. I have a lot of strong opinions about a lot of all ages material about kids things. Like, one of my strongest ones is Curious George, the Curious George PBS cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
He's a monkey. What did you think was going to happen? Like, that's my answer for every Curious George episode. Like, oh my gosh, George was in the kitchen of a restaurant and he made a giant mess. Well, first off, what's a monkey doing in a kitchen of a restaurant? and he's a monkey. Like, that's what he's gonna do. Like, he doesn't know how to make a fancy Italian dinner. He's gonna make a giant mess. He's a monkey. You put too much pressure on this guy, man. Just let George be a monkey.
Expect too much.
Exactly. Your expectations are way too high for this Curious George. Give him a break, for God's sakes.
So do we have anything else that we should be looking forward to from you?
I'm always working on something, man. Always. Hopefully in 2017, I'll have some more stuff. I think my productivity for this year, at least published-wise, is done with... I had four books come out this year in a trade. Three Monty issues, an Elvis Adventures, and then the Monty trade, which is a lot when you're, you know, self-funding this stuff.
Yeah.
Which is killer. I mean, I'm not bragging, but it's pretty awesome. Next year, hopefully, I'll get some more stuff done. Kevin and I are working on some stuff with some talented people, so I'm really excited about that. So we're just gonna keep on moving, baby. Just keep on making books because I love doing it. It's just fun.
What would your dream writing gig be? Like, if you could write anything, what would you write?
I don't know. That's an interesting question. I don't know. I would love to write a Simpsons episode. Like, I think it would be great to write a Simpsons episode. I would probably just recycle an old Simpsons episode, like Lisa Becomes a Vegetarian, and just modernize the jokes to see if anybody would notice, because the show's been on TV for so long, I don't think anybody would know. But comics wise, I mean, I would love to write a Spider-Man issue. I would love to write Spider-Man because he's my favorite dude. I would love to write dialogue for The Thing. I love Ben Grimm. He's one of my favorite dudes in comics. I've always kind of loved his, like, his snarky woe is me attitude. because he is rather like grumpy. Like he's always kind of being, you know, kind of grumpy and silly, but at the same, but he's also very funny at the same time too. Like he's very self-deprecating. I've always enjoyed that about Ben.
Spider-Man is also my favorite. I think if I could write anything, it'd probably be Spider-Man as well.
It's just like I was saying, it's one of those things that I don't know if this part is going to be there or not, but like I was saying, there's so many Spider-Man stories. I don't know them all, so I don't want to inadvertently rip something off. That would be my biggest fear about writing another character. You know what I would really love to write are those old school, they don't do them anymore, but the Marvel 2-in-1 books where it would be like,
yeah,
because I used to read those, you know, religiously, even when because one of the things I love more than anything about comics is I love dollar boxes. I love flipping through dollar boxes, and dollar boxes all over the country are filled with, you know, the Marvel 2-in-1s, Thing and a guy do an adventure.
Yeah.
And I would love to write Thing and random guys do adventures because Thing is he's so much fun. Like he's just so self-deprecating and grumpy, and he's the original Marvel strongman, but he was never really a recon, so he didn't add a bunch of new powers. He's just some guy who's really strong and made of rock.
Right.
You know, like every other character in the Marvel universe, even some of them on his own team, have been reconned to be super powerful. And the Thing is just some guy made a rock who's pretty strong. Like that's his power, you know? And it never changed. And, you know, if you read enough Fantastic Four, you can just see him. He's either babysitting the kids or getting his ass kicked. And it kind of never changed for him. So I would really enjoy writing The Thing, I think, in the old Marvel 2-in-1s. That would be a lot of fun.
What would you say is your spirit animal?
A dachshund.
A dachshund?
A dachshund, wiener dogs. I love wiener dogs.
I can totally see that, actually.
They get me. I had this idea because we have two dogs here. I haven't written it yet because I haven't really come up with how I want to do it. But we have two dachshunds, Mookie and Shay. And before my wife and I had kids, of course, our dogs were the best thing in the whole wide world. We used to take them places with us. We used to go to the dog park, and they had this wonderful, they would go on walks all the time. They were the two fittest dachshunds you've ever seen. They lived this life of luxury. And then we had kids, and then it all ended. We still pay attention to them, but they've clearly been backburnered, and they kind of know it. So I would love to write this book about these two dogs that haven't made in the shade, and how everything is wonderful, and they have this luxurious life, and then all of a sudden, these two little baby humans show up and ruin everything. Like, I would love to write that. I just don't know how to go about doing it where the babies are the antagonists, where do you know what I'm saying? Where it doesn't make it seem like kids are awful. You know, so I don't know, but I think that would be a fun book, like a little kid's book or something. But yeah, it would be a dachshund.
Dachshund. What was your favorite series as a kid? Comic book series?
Spider-Man. Amazing Spider-Man. I read everything that had Spider-Man in it, be it like he showed up. I remember, I think it's Avengers issue 317. It's just a white cover with Spider-Man on the cover and like a couple other of the Avengers. I bought it just because Spider-Man was in it. I read it just because Spider-Man was in it. I was that kid. So I very much get the sense of Deadpool being in everything now, because there are kids out there that love Deadpool that are going to read everything he's in. So I would just buy everything that had Spider-Man. I mean, I couldn't get enough Spider-Man. He was great. I mean, he made sense to me. Like he was some kid who had bad luck, who, you know, who was just trying to live his life, but he also had spider powers. You know, like he was everyman. It was cool. Yeah. Like I really dug him. You know, like I tried to read X-Men because all my friends read X-Men, but you know, as a 12-year-old kid, X-Men was a little too serious.
I get that.
You know, a little too involved. I mean, it was 17 years of Chris Claremont writing X-Men. Like it was, it's hard to jump in somewhere, you know?
Yeah, it was hard. That was kind of the same for me. Like one of my first memories of comic books was going to our local Scott's back when they sold comic books at grocery stores, and picking up Amazing Spider-Man after they rebooted.
Yeah,
for a little bit, and then they phased back into the original numbering. But picking up, I think it was Amazing Spider-Man 3 was when I started reading that.
Oh, that's cool.
And then every month we just go to back to Scott's and I'd pick up the next issue.
See, you're lucky that way because I used to get books everywhere. Like, there was a time where every place sold comic books, not right. just comic shops. Like you said, the grocery stores. At the Navy Exchange in Norfolk, Virginia, they had a spinner rack. There was a bookstore up the street from my house called Smith Books, and they had spinner racks, and they had, like, long boxes full of old comics. And, like, I would go all the time and just buy books, but I never got anything in order because, like, it was just whatever you could find.
Right.
So, like, my Spider-Man collection was, I had Amazing Spider-Mans that were, you know, 342 and 333 and 334 and 336 and 315 and 317 and 311. Like, it was, I filled in gaps later, but I never got to read a full Spider-Man arc when I was a kid because, like, they were impossible to find. Right. You know, they didn't have, like, pull systems. You would just go in and hopefully there was a new Spider-Man. I didn't know when the hell the next one came out. You just would show up and hopefully there'd be a new Spider-Man there. And if not, you just find something else that had Spider-Man in it, or like, hey, Batman, let's try Batman. So we read that for a while. But again, it's just gaps all over the place, which is very fun.
Yeah, when where I grew up, we didn't have any kind of comic book shop or anything because I grew up in a small town. Northeast Indiana, and so I would get stuff at Scott's, and then the only other place I could find stuff was random comics that I would pick up at Goodwill.
Yeah,
so I picked up a short box of old Justice Society of America and Justice League of America, just like random ones from the 80s.
And that's so awesome.
That's also what I like because that's what I read when I was a little kid. Like, I love Starman; he's one of my favorite. So, which is a pretty obscure little character, but I always liked him.
Yeah, it's cool, man. I mean, I felt that way about Green Arrow. Like, I read the covers were just cool, like the Mike Grell Green Arrow books, mm-hmm. and I would just pick them up. I remember one in specifically that was like, I guess he was in Africa, like fighting poachers, which for, you know, again, a 12-year-old kid, you're reading this, you're like, what the hell is this about? But the cover was so awesome. You know, there was like this majestic lion and all this stuff. So I picked it up and I read it, and I find myself enjoying Green Arrow because it was a little more serious. And I went back, and then I, as a older fella, I read like Longbow Hunters and all that stuff. And God, it's so great, you know. So I have this affinity for Green Arrow.
So I'm going to ask you a series of either or questions.
Okay.
And so you can just pick what you would take out of it.
Sure.
Star Wars or Star Trek? Starting off big.
Oh man, that's so hard because I do a Star Trek podcast called Dork Trek, and I love Star Trek so much, and there's so much of it to me that's still undiscovered because I never watched Voyager, and I'm in the process of watching DS9. I love TNG. You know what, the prospects of new Star Wars sounds fun to me, but like, I'm not into the idea of them doing a Han Solo movie. Like, I don't want a new Han Solo. Like, I've got old Han Solo. I've got Harrison Ford Han Solo. I don't want new. I don't care. Like, I'm good. So you know what? I'm gonna say Star Trek. Even though I want to see Rogue One. I'm super jazzed about Rogue One. But like
yeah, it looks great.
Here's my thing, right? I hate to go off because I know this is supposed to be quick, but if you can recast Han Solo and do movies about him being younger, why can't I get a new Indiana Jones? Why is Indiana Jones sacred ground? Why can't we just recast another Indy? It pisses me off beyond belief.
Yeah, I understand that.
You know? I mean, because they're both iconic characters. Why pick one and go, oh, let's get some young English kid to make a bunch of new Han Solo movies? No, no, no. Let's get some young English kid to make some new Indiana Jones movies while we're at it. Come on. I don't want to see 70-year-old Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones. Get out of here. Okay, I'm done.
I was watching TNG yesterday, and it was the episode Parallels where Worf comes back from Betlith.
Yes, the Batleth tournament.
Yeah, and yeah. Everything's a little bit different. He keeps having those. Yeah, and they have to fight the Cardassians sort of and all that. And I came up with what I think is the greatest idea for a spinoff Star Trek series of all time. I think they should have a reality Star Trek series called Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
Whoa, hey now.
Yeah, I think I would be happy for the rest of my life if they did that. Because I love trashy reality TV, so
and why I feel like
that would cross off all of my genre wants.
That's cool, man. I'm down with that. I think, you know, pitch it. You never know. They're looking for ideas. The new Star Trek show just lost their showrunner, so maybe you pitch the idea and they run with it.
They lost Brian Fuller?
Yeah, he's not the showrunner anymore. I don't think that show's ever going to get made. I got a bad feeling.
Oh, my gosh.
It got pushed back, and then now... Yeah, it got pushed back, and now Brian Fuller's gone. Like, he's going to be there, but he's not running the show anymore. I don't know what his job is, so I'm scared.
Yeah, I didn't hear that. That's super depressing.
Yeah, it happened last week. I didn't mean to ruin your day. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Burritos or conies?
Burritos. I don't like conies. That's not a thing for me.
All right.
Cincinnati chilies, I'm not going to lie to you. Kind of gross.
Superheroes or detective stories? Noir, so to speak.
Do I get to pick who's writing my noir and super? I see, that's a tough one because like there's so much bad detective shit out there. Like it's just awful. But you could say the same thing for superheroes.
You can pick your writers.
Then I'll just go James Ellroy writing, you know, his LA noir stuff because it's the best.
All right. Coffee or tea?
Coffee all day, every day. Tea. Come on. That's I don't think I would live without coffee. Like it keeps my brain functioning.
I got sick like 2 months ago and turns out that I have like acid reflux disease. Mm-hmm. And so I couldn't have coffee for like a month while my stomach reset. And it was like the worst month of my life.
I just would have killed myself.
Yeah, it was awful. I don't know how I survived, honestly. My work suffered, that's for sure.
Yeah, totally, right?
Music or podcasts?
I like music because I can listen to music with my kids around. I can cater things to them where sometimes podcasting gets a little risque, if you will, and my kids will find that boring. I have a lot of friends who podcast, and they ask me if I listen, and I tell them no, except when I go on long drives because anytime I go anywhere to like cons or shows or whatever, I download podcasts, and I'll just bulk listen because I can. But, you know, my kids don't want to listen to, you know, somebody talk about comics or Star Trek or old school hip hop or, you know, whatever the case may be, as interesting as it may be. Like, they don't care because they just want to hear, you know, my son wants to hear Tutti Frutti over and over again.
Yeah.
You know?
What's your favorite con that you've been to?
I love Heroes in Charlotte, North Carolina, because a lot of everybody I know goes to that show, and it's so massive, and there's such a crowd who just love art and who love the medium. But I have to say probably my favorite show that I've been to is TriCon in West Virginia. It's in Huntington, West Virginia. And that's no offense to the other shows. I love Tidewater Comic Con. I love Hampton Con. But the show in Huntington, West Virginia, it's called TriCon. It's run by two guys, Eric and James. Their audience in Huntington, West Virginia and the surrounding areas, they have a hunger for comics. Like they love comic books. Like as someone selling self-published books and like titles you've never heard of, like they're just hungry to read things. They're willing to take a shot on pretty much anything, which is very awesome. You know, a lot of the times, and I think it's happening too often with the Comic Con community, a lot of people love comics culture. They love the movies, they love the films, they love the toys, they love the logos, they love the t-shirts, but they don't necessarily love comics. So they're looking for things that they know from screens and stages and things of that nature, like already kind of established ideas. The idea of trying to pitch something new to someone at a con can be quite disheartening because, you know, I've had people come up to me. This was when I was self-publishing Monty, and this was the first show that I ever debuted the book at. And I was in a town in Pennsylvania, and this kid came up to me and he goes like, "I've never heard of this." And I looked at him and I said, "Of course you haven't, because this is the first time anyone's ever seen it. you know? So like, yeah, of course you've never seen this. And like a lot of people who go to shows, they're not that brazen about their grumpy attitude towards new intellectual properties, but they just, they're not interested. Like they, like I had a kid at that same show come up to me and ask me after paying $10 to get into a Comic-Con, where can I buy a Spider-Man shirt? And I looked at him, I was like, Target. Like, what do you, like, go to Target if you want a Spider-Man shirt. They have them. You've pretty much paid for it by coming to this show. You have no interest in anything anyone's doing here. You just want to, you saw something about a Comic-Con on Big Bang Theory, and you thought it would be fun to check out, which is cool, but it's cool for the promoters of cons, but I think, you know, sometimes the creators suffer, if that makes sense, you know? So I would, but this audience in West Virginia, in Huntington, West Virginia, they just love comics. Like they love the medium. They love the idea of books. And, you know, I've sold Monty there 2 years in a row. And this was the last year when I did the show, I didn't have issue 2 out yet, but I had people looking for it and they were like, oh man, issue 2's not out. That stinks. Oh, but you got a new book. I'll buy that. And like, it was like the transaction rate was at least like 70-80% of people that would walk over to the table.
Wow.
You know, it was almost like if I didn't sell them a book, I was like, wow, that's really weird. You know, where at most shows it's just expected. Like, you know, you don't sell a book after you're talking to somebody. It's cool. It's not a big deal, but you know, it's expected. But here it's like, wow, that's weird. They just love comics and they come back for more, which is cool. So I make sure that I do TriCon in Huntington, West Virginia every year. It's a wonderful show. If you're a comic creator and you're listening to this, do that show. It's really fun. It's 1 day. You're in, you're out. It's amazing. I love that show.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I think my favorite con that I've been to is probably Cincy.
CincyCon's cool, but again, they have a lot of great creators, but sometimes I feel like the people that are there don't know who these people are, if that makes sense. You know, like they're looking for, you know, Lando or the wrestler or, you know, or the guy that was on the TV show, and Tony and his wife, whose name escapes me at the moment, which is going to make me mad, Kara. Tony and Kara don't do that.
Mm-mm.
Like they have comic people there, and for people that are into comics, into the idea of comics and into the medium of books, it's amazing. Like it's an amazing show.
Yeah, well, and the level of talent that they get is incredible every year, because I go to Indiana Comic Con. I've gone there for the last 3 years, and it's all right, but you can tell that they spend the majority of their money getting like Jackie Gleason or people from
Jackie Gleason's kid
from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, like they'll spend all their money getting him, and then they'll have like maybe one comic book creator that makes comic books now. And like I like seeing all the old creators too, but the nice thing about Cincy Comic Con is like Jason Latour was there last year and the whole team that makes Spider-Gwen, so I was excited about that. And
yeah.
And they have a lot more independent comic book creators that come to it as well, which is nice.
Yeah, it's cool, man. It's a really great show. And I'm happy because it's my hometown show. You know, it's very cool. But, you know, sometimes you just, it's, you know, like anything else, you just get a lot of looky-loos. And I'm talking strictly from a business standpoint. Like as someone who goes to, I haven't been to a Comic Con just to go. And God, I can't remember how long it's been. And the last one I went to was CincyCon when I didn't table. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. Like the amount of people that are here and the amount of talent in this room, it's crazy. I mean, it was awesome.
Right.
You know,
I
also like
liked it because it was the place I met you.
Well, that was a magical lead. That was a magical day.
That was magic.
all because of Andy, your brother, your like brother relative-in-law or something.
Uncle-in-law?
Right? He's an uncle?
That's a thing. Yeah. I call him my bruncle because he's my bro and my uncle.
Nice.
Yeah, my bruncle. Well, it's been nice talking to you, Bob.
Yeah, man. Thank you. And please, if you can hear this and you're hearing the sound of my voice, please go to your local comic shop and buy Monty the Dinosaur Volume 1 when it comes out in trade. If they don't have it, you can get it at Barnes & Noble. You can get it on Amazon. Order it. I think you'll like it, especially if you have kids or you're into the idea of silly things and you just enjoy comics, then I think you'll like this book. It's very fun.
Do you have any other websites people should check out?
I'm trying to start Tumblr again. I don't have a website because I'm poor, but somebody tricked me into going back to Tumblr. So, like, you should do your Tumblr. And my Tumblr is what? Bob France, one word, BobFrantz at Tumblr. And then I've got a Twitter, BFrance19. Just don't go on Google and search for Bob France, because there's a guy in Cleveland who hosts a radio show who's kind of Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity-ish, which is a real bummer. That's not me, and I'm not him. Like, I write goofy comics. This guy is kind of a maniac, which I found out later in life, which was funny because I did radio at one point too, and someone Googled me when I was doing radio, and they were like, "Hey, did you get a job in Cleveland?" And I was like, "No, why?" And I looked it up and I was like, "Oh my God, this is the worst thing ever." So it's Tumblr, Bob France, one word, FRANTZ at Tumblr dot whatever. I don't know how Tumblr works, but I'm on there. Twitter is what, BFrantz, FRANTZ19, Action Lab Entertainment. You know, I'm trying, man. I'm trying. Loophole Comics is something that I do too. It's just like my self-publishing thing where, like, because like I said, I like to pitch books, and if books don't get picked up, they become Loophole Comics books, and you never know, you know?
There you go.
Because a pitch might not work now. It's not that it might not work at all. It just might not be the time, you know? So keep that in mind too if you're making books.
All right. Well, it's been a pleasure talking, Bob.
It's been a pleasure talking to you too, sir. I really enjoyed you letting me yammer on like a crazy person for almost an hour.
Well, I enjoyed it too.
good. And again, this was your first go around. I think you did a really great job. If you want more guests, I can try to finagle. I can try to finagle some guests for you. I know people.
That would be great. So, always looking for people.
I know people. I know talented people. I know I'm a great guy.
All right. Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Andrew. I appreciate it, man.
Yep. Have a great day.